5, Arlington, Robinson, and Young.
When you were replaced by a commander, was there a transition period in which you were breaking him in?
Yeah, I'd say about several weeks.
When you were in the top of Admiral Lawler, about Radford, out of Radford Field,
in
which you were described in the Welder, how he might have
been? I'd say about several weeks.
No, Long had sat right there with me and would watch us work, and I never thought it necessary to remind Wellander to impress upon this man the need for security, because after all, Wellander was a flag officer with the same integrity that I had, which I'd like to emphasize to you, sir, is based on 30 years of service.
Well, you understand that I am making implications here and trying to draw you out on some of these things,
and
as much candor as I can.
I hope I've been able to answer them.
Sure. You have, and if the questions seem to impugn your integrity or your motives or anything of this kind, it's not through any desire on my part to make it awkward for you, but simply to be sure that we've aired everything that has been alleged in this case and give you an opportunity to reply it.
I'd just like to point out that in my view, a very important relationship here that should be looked in by the principals before there is too much more interrogation of junior people. And I'm talking about the relationship between two senior officials and the president's personal family, Dr. Kissinger and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Now, that relationship is known to both gentlemen, and I feel that presidents must certainly be aware of their relationship. There are all sorts of institutional problems involved in this relationship. One of them involves, I'm sure, the Department of Defense on the one hand, who has, I think, very proper institutional prerogatives which they intended and desired to preserve. And it's my suggestion that the principals sit down and discuss this with you, sir, at a very timely occasion, because we can get into some of the starchier national security decisions that were made during this period in this informal relationship between the two that I don't think would be in the best interest of all concerned if they were eliminated. Now, I think you know what I'm talking about. I sat and talked to you, for example, the morning before the Cambodian operation, before the president made a decision, and I know that he relied heavily on your decision and your assessment of what the domestic implications would be, and you discussed these in great length with me. This, in many respects, was a briefing outside channel. If you wanted that type of a briefing, I think that would have been possible to administer some of any number of people. So I do think that it's important to get this into perspective of the locality. And while I'm concerned about the type of a briefing, I think that it would have been possible to have could have come from any number. So I do think that it's important to get this into perspective of the locality. And while I'm concerned about any of the administrative procedures, and I would any encouragement that I might have given Radford along any lines to obtain information. I don't know what he thinks in his mind he got for me. I suspect getting a paper from Dick Kennedy that Dick Kennedy promised me on the telephone would in Radford's mind be a clandestine asset or acquisition that was above and beyond propriety. I didn't say to Radford, Colonel Kennedy has given me a copy of this talker to Xerox for Admiral Moore. I did not want anyone to know that. I didn't want Radford to know it. And I would dare say that any time Radford ever got me a paper, it was done in the knowledge that No one knew it but me. Because I didn't think there would be any mutual purpose for Radford to know that an NSC staff officer, or that Dr. Kissinger, or that Haley had prepared documents and provided me copies to show the chairman.
And this would be a set of circumstances where you would say to Radford, go to Kennedy's office and get such a paper?
That's right. Really, the scenario would be something like this. I would be on the telephone all morning long or down in one of the offices saying, I got to get this paper, particularly on the Jordan operation, was one that I was deeply involved in because there was the rapid movement of naval forces. I'm sure you're aware of the president's decision in Chicago to deploy that naval task force. And so I worked with Hal Saunders very, very closely on the scenario of this movement because it was important from a standpoint of timing that things be done quickly without necessarily the overstaffing that would come from a request formally going to the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying, what naval forces do you have ready? I could talk to you in detail about some of these, sir, but I don't think that those should be on your tape.
But I'm interested in the sequence of it all.
Right, I'm sorry. Now, let me talk how this could come up. And as I sit here, I think I'm getting to understand this boy better. I would say to him, go down. This would be after I had coordinated and perhaps even written two or three pages of the poster for Henry. And I wrote much of it as an NSC staff officer. I would say, go down to Saunders' office, or who was the Manhattan Pacific? Go to Holdridge's office, and get the poster for this afternoon's meeting. The chances are that the officer, the principal concerned with it, had just gone to
self-starter.
No, I didn't use such doctrine. No, I said no. I just am I'm absolutely convinced that he didn't. Now, of course, you were liable to turn up a document here and say, see, this is the one he gave me. Well, I handle thousands of documents. All I can say, sir, to the best of my knowledge and recollection, and I think this is so important, this is the most important discussion that I've had in 30 years, that I would not conceal information that would contribute to you understanding this fact.
All right, now, to try and analyze it, there would really be three kinds of documents. There would be documents that came to you on a routing slip with your name on it. There would be documents...
And some would have my name. They'd just be pitched by INL, you know.
All right, but they came to you from INL in accordance with some distribution decision of that unit.
Right.
All right, that's one class. The second class was the group of documents that you sent Radford for, either under prior arrangement. Then there would be a third group of documents that would come to you from some other area, I said, either under prior arrangement, but unknown to him that was prior. Then there would be a third group of documents that would come to the class that would come to you from some other area, I said, either there would or there would not be such documents. Can you say for sure whether such documents in that third class ever came to you? And if so, from what source?
Would there ever be documents come to me that either didn't have my name on or had not been sent, or I had not sent? I had not sent those documents. I cannot recollect any. The only thing that would vaguely fit into this category would be this nebulous bunch of tissue paper and so forth that came back on Hague's one trip.
All right. Well, I then come back to the factual dilemma that faces us. We have here a yeoman who testifies categorically that he was instructed by you to keep his eyes and ears open in behalf of your office, who testifies categorically and whose testimony tends to be corroborated by the polygraph, that he made incursions into people's briefcases and into their private papers, so to speak, and made deliveries of those papers to me, to the liaison for the Joint Chiefs, Chairman.
But differentiate, if you would, sir, between me and Wallner.
Well, I'll say it was me. Now, I'm coming to that. And we have the testimony of Admiral Wallner as to certain documents which Radford did indeed obtain in the way that he describes and delivered to Wallner. Now, there is a group of documents which Admiral Wallner says were not delivered to him by Radford. By a process of deductive elimination, it means, to me at least, that if he delivered those kinds of documents to anybody, they would have had to come to you. And they fall in the classification of internal political memos that are of the nature of political discussions between Dr. Kissinger or Al Haig and the President, for instance. Materials clearly obtained from Henry's briefcase and Al's briefcase in not relating to trips but in day-to-day activity. And I want to ask you squarely, so that we have an opportunity to meet the issue squarely, whether any such documents were ever brought to you by Radford.
I don't know whether he ever brought me any document. All I can say, sir, is that I never told him or encouraged him to go into anyone's briefcase, nor would I ever do that. That would be strictly contrary to my ethics. It could well be that in the documents that came to me, one could have been in that category, but without my knowledge. Now, as far as me encouraging him ever to go into anyone's briefcase, I can categorically say, on polygraph, or on any type of interrogation that you would want to give me, that this would not be so. First of all, Mr. Edmund, I think you have to realize that my relationship with Al Haig and with Dr. Kissinger did not require me to demean my uniform, and by my uniform I don't mean the cloth, but my station in life. My relationship with Al Haig and with Dr. Kissinger did not require me to remove my uniform. But the many things that I don't do is that my people, you know, I tell them, what's the deal? To do something like this.
Look,
I just have an intuitive feeling here that the many things that he did do to me, he now thinks had a greater clandestine motive to them than I intended, or that even existed. Now, I had a method to my madness, too. I felt that by impressing upon him the clandestine nature of the papers within the NSC system, the sensitive nature, that he interpreted it as a clandestine operation, and far beyond that which even has credibility.
Oh, I mean, you think you had a motive for that?
Yes, sir. My motive was to keep him so uptight that he would never be indiscreet. After all, we were in an office in the Pentagon that had a half dozen other officers, Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marine Corps colonels. I did not want Radford ever to think that a document that he obtained over here in the White House was fair play for the other people. As a matter of fact, I have walked out in the office when he was taking a purely routine memo and reprimanded him for not shielding it while someone else was passing through.
Let me ask you another question and put it squarely to you. Did you ever indicate to Admiral Wagner, either inferentially or expressly, that Radford could be very useful to him, not only in his routine duties as a yeoman, but also as eyes and ears to obtain information?
No, sir, because I just did not feel that a flag officer needed eyes and ears.
Well, I mean, regardless of the reason, it never happened.
No, I never said that, never implied that. I certainly felt that Radford could be useful in terms of being a runner and in terms of being a leg man. I never gave Radford cause to think that he was a substantive action officer. I discouraged him from trying to get into the substance of things. Now, Radford did feel that I was overworked, and I would notice that Radford would screen the messages for me and underline things that he thought were important. And I thought about this for some time, and I thought, do I want him simply to throw those on my desk, or do I want him to help screen them? And I thought that if he had the time and the capability to look down at a message and say, oh, here's one that I know he has been interested in, he would highlight it. But that was about it before, and if he had the time and the capability to look down at a message and say, oh, here's one that I know he has an interest in, and he would highlight it. But that was about as far as he would get. I used him, check one. I did use him as an action officer in trying to assemble statistics for Dr. Kissinger on the number of Air Force going into Cambodia. Dr. Kissinger first wanted to
Cambodia.
Yeah. When there was question as to whether or not I don't quite know how to say this in public form, but there was a question in the parts of certain senior individuals in this building as to whether or not